This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Welcome back, everybody, to the People Speak Radio Show. I'm your host for tonight, Steve Johnson. The People Speak Show normally airs every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific and 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network. You can participate in the show with call-in questions for our guests toll-free on in USA and Canada on 1-888-429-5471. This is a fantastic show tonight. I'm more excited than Vladimir Putin at a pajama party. We're talking to our very special guest here. He's a cryptozoologist, a researcher, and a famed Australian Bigfoot and Yowie hunter, Mr. Rex Gilroy. Welcome to the People Speak Show, Mr. Gilroy, sir.
Good evening, Steve.
Good to hear you, sir. We'll be taking audience questions after the first half hour, but my first question to you tonight is, how did you first get started into looking into the strange phenomena of Bigfoot hunting?
Well, I started when I was 13 years old collecting mystery animal and relic hominin reports here in Australia, and I'm still doing it. In a couple of weeks' time, I'll be 73 years old. I have no intention of retiring. And over the years, I've built up an enormous collection, some 15,000 reports of relic hominins in Australia, New Guinea, and also Australian mystery animals like the Tasmanian tiger, the Australian panther, which is a large marsupial cat, the giant monitor lizard, and various other creatures. And I've written 15 published books, and very shortly there'll be another half a dozen joining them, and one of these is on the Tasmanian tiger. So I'm putting all my evidence out there while I can for the average Australian to see what's in their own country here. My wife Heather and I were in America in 2014, and I was looking for evidence to show that the Australian megalithic civilization, the Uru, which I've written books on, actually made it to America on cross-Pacific voyages and passed on information which certain Amerindian cultures in Middle America and South America used to cross the Pacific. They knew about the Great West Land, for example, with the Great Red Rock at its center marking the center of the world. Now, how'd they know about Ayers Rock? I also carried out work on the Bigfoot. The fossil footprints found here in Australia of our Yowie match those of Bigfoot and other creatures between Russia, Southeast Asia, Australia. It seems that Homo erectus evolved here in Australia rather than Africa and migrated northwards when we had a land shelf linking us to Asia, and that shelf was used to move all the way up into Russia, and gradually they crossed the Bering Strait into the Americas. The fossil tracks that we found over there included 12-foot-tall giant hominin impressions, as well as modern human-size impressions, and these match Australian fossil tracks and all those of Southeast Asia and mainland Asia, and also recent footprints of the Yowie giant form and smaller. There's at least four types of Yowie in Australia. The basic Homo erectus footprint is found in Bigfoot. Bigfoot and the Yowie are one and the same creature, and it's evident that they evolved in Australia and spread up into the old world and across into the Americas over a million years ago.
There is a researcher here in Western Australia I've been in touch with called Trevor, who follows your work exclusively and has a lot of information.
Trevor Horsfield.
Yeah. That is correct. Yes, he lives nearby. In fact, I talked to him quite a bit. He put me on to you as far as getting you as a guest. Now, he suggests that there's a place in New South Wales called Canoundra where certain truck drivers will not pass through because of the many, many reports they're getting of truck drivers being harassed and even assaulted by these Bigfoot. Can you establish that? Can you verify and validate that?
Well, I don't know anything about that. There's that many reports. Mate, it's I've got thousands of them, and it's impossible to keep up with them sometimes. Stories are coming in all the time. Our scientific fraternity in the universities won't touch these things. They say they don't exist. And one academic said that any Australians that claim to have seen mystery animals or the Yowie are in need of psychiatric treatment. That means most of the country is suffering from psychological problems, if that's true. I have to deal with a lot of fake sightings sometimes. There's always the hoaxer, but I've learned long ago how to tell these people, and I'm a common sense scientific researcher. I've published a book, for example, the Yowie Mystery, Living Fossils from the Dreamtime, which deals with the anatomy and physiology of relict hominins, particularly here in Australia, their bone structure, and based on fossil skulls that we have found in Australia, I have shown that there's basically four types of hominin involved. The Aborigines got four different races together in ancient times and just made a composite hominin out of them. That is, the Yowie is a composite being of four different races. One group are pygmies, and they're more than one race of pygmy types. Then you have the true hairy man, which is something like Australopithecus. And we do have Australopithecus skulls here in Australia. And then we have the joint hairy man, which is the 12-footer, and he's about, he's actually, as I say, the same as the smaller variety, which is our height, Homo erectus proper. And we have stone tools made by these creatures, mega tools of the giant form, for example, found all over Australia, and I was looking for them in America. I didn't find any, but I did find smaller tool types in places like in Silverton and in Colorado, where I made a big discovery of 1 million-year-old implements which matched ordinary Homo erectus tools found here in Australia. And not only ancient ones, we have recent ones in Australia of the Yowie. And, of course, the styles match those all that way across the Pacific there in America. So these hominins have really gotten around. They started here in Australia, migrating perhaps a million years ago, and they've left groups in various parts of Southeast Asia, which were cut off from one another when the Ice Age ended and the sea levels rose and created all the Southeast Asian islands.
Now, you said earlier that the scientific community and the academic community call this and will not recognize or acknowledge the existence of these things. I have seen evidence, however, that places like the Smithsonian Institute have actually hidden a lot of this stuff and hidden a lot of this evidence that they've collected over the years, and that they don't want people to know this because it goes against the stuff that they're teaching kids in schools. Would you agree with that, that there is actually a conspiracy to withhold this information from people?
God, yes. Yes, in fact, not only in Australia and America, but there's a lot of Americans, I find, are far more go-ahead and are more readily willing to open-mindedly accept things like I study here in Australia. I have no trouble putting my ideas across to any American researchers and even the odd scientist who keeps an open mind. They're the sort I like. And we've got a couple of them here in Australia that say, you know, you find the physical proof, we'll sit on the fence, and if you find the physical proof, I'll gladly have a look at it and tell you what you've got. And, you know, what can be more fairer than that? You know, we haven't got physical proof yet. We've got material close to it. And I think the day is coming very close here in Australia when we'll have that physical proof. And I can show it to scientists that at least are sitting on the fence and not judging me. I've spent many years, Steve, trying to get scientific credibility for Australian relic hominology in particular, and mystery animals in this country, and to get scientists to keep an open mind. And it took me about 40 years, but I'm starting to win that fight a little. But there is this conspiracy of diehards who love that textbook. And if the textbook's wrong, you know, their world falls apart. They're frightened of their academic credibility, for example, being ruined if it becomes generally known in academic circles that they are believers in everything from UFOs to mystery animals. I keep an open mind. I'm an all-round researcher, and my wife Heather also, and we have no hang-ups as far as all this goes, and we've got a tremendous amount of evidence of many different fields of research in this country, even ufology. And I think it's incredible the amount of unexplained phenomena that's in this world, and even here in Australia, that people with the education that should know better are acting detrimentally to human knowledge, and that they're trying to suppress evidence which would support a lot of these things. It's the same with, particularly with UFOs. Out there, let's face it, there's billions and trillions of stars and planets that we don't even know about yet. Who's to say what's out there? We can't possibly be the only form of intelligent life in the universe, and there's got to be more. And the same thing goes for our mystery animals. There's tens of thousands of square miles of unexplored, impenetrable even, country in parts of eastern Australia that any mystery creature could live in and you wouldn't know it. And that goes for the Americas as well, because there's jungles in South America and the like that are still, you know, revealing evidence of mystery creatures. And until we can get into these areas, until we can search for that evidence and find it, you know, we've got to keep an open mind about everything, I feel.
Well, talking about intelligent life in our universe, there's certainly a distinct lack of intelligence that I see in places like Canberra and Washington, D.C., which is amazing. Some people tell me if such things exist, we would see some bones. We would see a skull or at least some remains of these things. Do you believe that these things have been found and they're being kept from us?
I have a 2-million-year-old or 2.5-million-year-old, what I call Australopithecus australis. It's a robust Australopithecus skull from here in Katoomba that came from late Pliocene deposits after heavy rain washed away the side of an embankment, and I was taking my dog for a walk along a bush track overlooking the Jameson Valley, and I saw these two eyes peering out of the dirt at me, and I thought, hey, that's a bit of a fossil skull, and I was able to dig it out with a stick, but it was, to my utter surprise, it was an Australopithecine type skull. I'd already found Homo erectus type skulls in Australia. So we know that the Homo erectus type yowies have been around a long time, but Australopithecines are not supposed to have left Africa. I have disproven the textbook that they did, because they actually, at some stage, maybe up to 3 million or so years ago, left Africa and migrated across the old world and found their way down through Southeast Asia to Australia. This skull is the type specimen, the first Australopithecine skull found outside of Africa, and I found it. And of course, being an amateur, my work is not recognised by the scientific fraternity here in Australia. In fact, I'm on a university blacklist, not to be helped for anything, even identifying a moth. That's how bad it is. They're trying to suppress knowledge, and there was a campaign years ago to try and discredit me in the media because I was finding too much. And you know, I'm here to help people that want to know more. Even the scientists have been invited to come and look at my fossil skull types. I've got about 200 specimens of skulls and jaws and teeth, and I've even got a cynodont, a mineralized creature the size of a mouse that was the ancestor of mammals and reptiles. In fact, it was a mammalian reptile that might have even grown hair, according to scientists, and it lived back in the days of the dinosaurs. But from them developed mammals and of course, primates and ourselves. It's incredible what this country has, and because it's not in the textbook, it doesn't exist. I'm afraid these things do exist.
Well, it sounds to me like they're very, very afraid of your research, that you might start waking people up to it. Do you think that's the case, that they're actually quite scared?
They won't even reply to me. They won't even come and look at my fossil skull types and bones generally and give me an unbiased scientific assessment. I have been denied that.
That to me sounds like scientific arrogance.
Exactly, sir.
Wow. Well, what kind of personal eyewitness accounts have you had that have got you so convinced that these people actually saw what they saw? Can you relate to us one specific event that really grabbed your attention?
Yes.
And said,
yeah? My own. I've got two, at least, sightings. One in 1970, on August 7th, 1970. It was a Tuesday. It was about 3:30 in the afternoon. I was leaving Jameson Valley, and I sat down on a ridge there overlooking a gully, and I was resting before I made a climb up the cliff walk to get up to the top of the cliffs before the sun went down, and I saw this man-sized creature 50 feet or so away come out of bushes with a digging stick, and he was moving across this hillside of ferns and dense gum forest. And if he saw me, he paid no attention to me. He just went about his business, digging for yams, I'd say, ripping up young ferns, because they eat fern fronds, they eat the stems. And he just picked his way across the gully, and I sat there dumbfounded, and he just disappeared into some bushes, and that was that sighting. Then, about 4 years ago, I was down in Jameson Valley again, but I took several photos of a gully, and when I got home, they were just put aside. And one day, Heather was going through all my digital photos, and she came to a couple of pictures I took that day in the Jameson Valley in July 2014, it was, and she could see in the distance a creature coming up through the jungle, working its way up. It looked man-sized, and there's a branch cuts across in front of her head. But on another occasion at Canangra Boyd Wilderness, out here in the southwest of Katoomba, behind Janolan Caves, it's very wild country. I was lost overnight in it in 1999 and had about 200 rescue people looking for me. I walked out the next morning. But it's only about 2 years now since I was up there during the day while my wife stayed at the car park, and I was up in the bush there looking for animal tracks, and I heard something crackling in the bush. I looked across, and I just saw this 4 foot tall, hairy creature, Australopithecine-like, I now believe, disappear behind a tree trunk. And I thought, oh, a wombat or something, or a kangaroo. Anyway, I went about my business, and then I got the feeling I was being watched. And that's not the first time I've ever had that one. But I saw this thing again, just briefly, only the top of it, hiding, crouching down behind shrubbery. And anyway, I was pretty worn out, so I sat down on a long granite shoal of rock at the base of an 8-foot-high granite cliff. And at the far end, the western end, was a large shrub. And while I'm sitting there, just before I made the last push to get out of the forest into the open, I saw something that was behind that bush, because it was starting to move. And I had my camera on me, and I thought, right, you're on. I picked up the camera and I charged towards it, because at that moment it disappeared. And I ran around behind the rocks. I couldn't see a thing. There was no noise. The forest was dry. There hadn't been rain in weeks. And I got an uneasy feeling. Wherever he went, he was there. There was a lot of granite boulders, and he obviously was hiding out there watching me.
Wow.
And I'd say it was more inquisitive than anything. Australopithecines weren't tool makers. They were vegetarians. And although the gracile Australopiths, rather than the robust type, of course, made stone tools, we believe now, and developed into early Homo. And we have a fossil evolutionary record for these creatures here in Australia. I have evidence, for example, that we had a number of primitive small primates living here. And I even have Miocene, 30 million years or something. We have Miocene impressions of 2 footprints, no bigger than perhaps your hand and fingers, about 14 centimeters in length. And I've also got a couple of hand impressions. And these are longer fingers than a normal human, like a gibbon. In other words, meant to grasp tree limbs. And the others, the footprints, are short-toed. And I found these in an area just northwest of the Blue Mountains, and in a place called Nunes. And the area is Miocene country. Well, we're taught that in Africa, man's ancestors left the trees about 6.5 million years ago to stand on 2 legs and forage. What I found 3 years ago was that we had something similar happen here some 17 million years ago. A race of creatures have been living in the trees, and they're starting to leave and forage on the ground. And it seems to me that this momentous event in human evolution happened far earlier than Africa, here in Australia. I've always said that Australia was the birthplace of modern humans, because we have Homo erectus skull types here, and I've got one in front of me, and they go back to about 1.8 million years old. We have evidence of the earliest Homo sapiens skulls here going back 800,000 years. And this sort of evidence is still being found in Africa. But it seems to me Australia had a head start for some reason. And man evolved, modern humans evolved from Homo erectus here in Australia before they did in Africa, and started migrating all over the world. And I have this evidence, and it is pertinent to the study of relic hominins, particularly here in Australia. And I've shown what the Yowie is. It's an Aboriginal composite of four distinct races. And the other research is, there's a lot of skullduggery going on amongst a lot of the researchers in this country. Some are not really genuine. They're out to get them their names in the newspapers and pulling off stunts and creating fake casts and all that. And there's no need for that. That is not science.
Yeah.
And so my wife and I have fought for 40 years now to get common sense research, and we're winning it. By showing the fossil foundations of Australian relic hominology, I've been able to put it on a scientific basis, and the scientists out there that have said they're still not convinced entirely, but others are saying they're keeping an open mind, and others are saying what we're doing is at least the best step that's ever been taken in this country to try to turn it into a scientific investigation. In other words, throw away all the rubbish and look for the real evidence. And that's what I've been doing all my life.
Right.
And even the Tasmanian tiger we showed is still alive on the mainland. And Trevor Horsfield has found evidence of that there in Western Australia.
Oh, yes.
Only last Tuesday, I was up here in the bushland at a place called Wallangambi Wilderness with two other assistants, and we found fresh Tasmanian tiger tracks, and I hadn't found them for about 30 years up there. They're very secretive animals. The Australian panther is another marsupial. It has a pouched... It has pouched young, like the thylacine. So it's definitely a marsupial and not a panther. But because of its black, shiny coat, it has that...
panther appearance.
That nickname, you can say, that of panther. And it's definitely a surviving remnant species, perhaps related to the extinct marsupial lion, Thylacoleo carnifex.
Right. Right. Well, with so many people going for bushwalks and expeditions in far-reaching places these days in modern times, why do you think these Yowies are so elusive? What do you think that is?
Well, they don't trust modern humans, no doubt.
So they're pretty smart, then.
But the Yowie collectively, and we're talking four different races, pygmies included, the pygmy is pretty well known, but the Aborigines just got all the different pre-Aboriginal races in this country a long time ago and combined them into a single creature, the hairy man. And there's hairy women too, of course. Let's not be sexist. There are definite females out there because they'd have to breed. And I go up to the Canangra Boyd Wilderness pretty regularly, wife, and we find tracks out there in the bush. They come maybe within a few hundred yards of a dirt road that cuts right through the national park to the Canangra Walls area, which overlooks a vast valley that you'd only have to stand on the cliff and look down and say anything could live there. People have gotten lost and never been seen again in the Blue Mountains. So we've got some wilderness here. And anyone that comes over here, quite welcome to contact me and come and see what I've got, because it's a lifetime's work, and the universities have made sure that I cannot find a museum to display my collection in, so it will survive in perpetuity when I die. And I mean, this is cruel. I mean, a life's work. They don't even recognize the 50,000 insects and spiders I've collected. I don't just collect. I research every single specimen and their life histories, their genetic mutations, variations, migration habits, and everything. And, you know, because of my lack of academic credentials, my collection is scientifically worthless, said a scientist on ABC Radio once over here. And I thought, that's a stupid statement. The collection is worthless because of my lack of academic credentials. What about the fossil skulls? I've walked my dog, for example, along a bush track, and 2 years ago looked down the slab of rock and found that it was an open-mouth theropod dinosaur sticking out of the ground. The skull had been flattened somewhat, and when I dug it out of the ground, I couldn't lift the thing. It was just a bit too heavy for me, so I got my wife to bring the car down this bush track, and we put it in the back. And I've got it here in the house now, and the plastic. And another time, I found, in 1972, I found half a gigantic footprint of a giant hominin, about 40 centimetres in length, on a big slab of ironstone out in the bush in North Katoomba, and I carried it for a few kilometres in one day, stopping every 20 feet or so to have a quick breathe and picking it up again. I started at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the day after I found it, actually, yes, and as the sun was going down, I reached the base of our house, which was up on top of the hill. And that was about the time I met Heather. And she's been a great help to me in the field ever since. Without Heather behind me, you know, I doubt if I would have accomplished many of the great works I have made. And if people want to see some of the accomplishments of the Gilroys, rexgilroy.com. MysteriousAustralia.com and AustralianYowieResearch.com.
Awesome.
You can find all about me on that.
Please do stick with us, sir. This is the People Who Speak Radio Show. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, talking with very special guest, Mr. Rex Gilroy, live on Internet Radio. And we'll be right back with our guest and audience questions after this short message break.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, PalTalk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 PalTalk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining PalTalk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hi, I'm Richard Bowser. This is the great BBS Radio.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak, every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
You're listening to the People Speak Radio Show, coming to you live across America and across the world in real time on the BBS Radio Network. I'm your host for tonight, Steve Johnson, and we're back with a very special guest, Mr. Rex Gilroy, famed Australian Yowie hunter. I encourage all the listeners to visit his websites at www.mysteriousaustralia.com and rexgilroy.com. Welcome back there, Rex, sir.
Yes, Steve. Hey, you know, I'm really enjoying myself. I love nothing better than to impart my knowledge to anyone that's interested. And I'm dying to get back to America as soon as we can find the money, because we only had 30 days to do what we could with a hire car, and that we accomplished quite a bit. We were over there in the southern states. I love the place, and I got as far as the Alamo, something I wanted to do all my life, and I visited the Alamo. Next trip, I've got to get to San Jacinto to see where Santa Ana got what was coming to him. And I must say, your museums over there are fantastic. And the Los Angeles Museum with this gigantic sauropod in there, well, it was incredible. And I just love it. Silverton, Yosemite National Park. I've got to get up to Calico on the next trip, because that's where artifacts are being found that predate American Indian appearance in America. The evidence is that Homo erectus was there. I found two fossil hominin skulls, which I have here, they're both endocasts, one of a pygmy-sized creature at Slate Creek in the country in from, in California there? It was on the way to Yosemite anyway, and I found it on the side of a creek where there'd been some flooding and it had been swept into a little hollow. The other one I found on the edge of a dried-up lake outside of Lone Pine, and it was an archaic Homo sapien skull, an internal cast, of course. Internal casts mean that the skull fills with soil, which mineralizes over a period. In this case, it was fine volcanic ash. And moisture gets into it, water, you know, and this turns into a cement-like state and preserves it. The outer bone falls away and leaves the impression. What I enjoy doing is reconstructing specimens like that by putting bones and hair on them on the outside. So I'm quite convinced that these two specimens, which were about 500,000 and 1 million years old respectively, were the mummified pygmy-sized one was about 1 million years, definitely. I am quite convinced that man in America predates Amerindian arrival. And wow. There's a lot of people there that are convinced too, even the late, great Dr. L.S.B. Leakey. But do you know what the authorities are doing now? They're trying to get all, and they've probably done it, I hope not, but they are trying to get all the records of the Calico discoveries, all the archaeological evidence, and destroy it. Are we in the Spanish Inquisition? Are we back in the Middle Ages where books were burned? And where they burn books, they generally burn people sooner or later. It's incredible. A place like America, so advanced compared to other countries, that we have scientists there that think no better than the mob down here in Sydney University. That, you know, they'd rather see evidence destroyed or suppressed because they don't want the public to know about it.
We're filling up with audience questions here. We got quite a few to get through. We got a question from Carol in Western Australia, who says, some people suggest that these things cannot be seen by the eye because the brain filters out things that are bizarre or unrecognizable. In other words, if you don't believe in Bigfoot, you're never going to see one. Do you think that's possible?
It's possible, I suppose. I keep an open mind, but you know, I quite believe these creatures exist, and I've got the physical evidence. If Carol wishes to come over here for holiday sometime and pop in and see the Gilroys, we'll be delighted to show her everything that I've got here, because I've got so much evidence. A skeptic came here once, and by the time I was finished with him, he walked away literally scratching his head. So I do have an effect on people. I have this urge to impart my enthusiasm on young people particularly. Let's face it, I'm 73. I might not be around all that long. I hope I'll be here for 20 years at least. I've got so much to do, Steve. I want to try and educate young people that want to take on these fields to start now with a scientific backing to it all. You know, don't just go out in the bush, we're going to catch a yowie. They'll find nothing. But if they do their research beforehand on the known the anatomy and physiology of the creatures, say, as laid down in my books, they'll have a better chance of finding evidence. I want to show people how to look for that evidence. I take young people out in the bush and show them things, and then sometimes we find a yowie footprint, and I take them to areas where I know that they seem to be more commonplace here in the Blue Mountains, and they will come close to civilization, but and even near humans, but they tend to keep their distance. We left the Stone Age world a long time ago. We could not live in their world today any more than they could live in ours. So you know, all we can do is study one another from a distance. And I've gotten a lot of young people to take on a scientific interest and go out there and look properly. And I've even encouraged some young people to have something I never had, and that was a good education. I had to teach myself. I had a poor education. I've encouraged young people to go to university and come out still thinking open-mindedly. I've told them always keep an open mind and don't be told what to think. And so my aim now is to enthuse young people with all the knowledge I have on how to find one creature or another, and it's working, and I can see the next generation of young people are going to be completely different to the ones we have around now. There'll be very little skepticism. There'll be very little ignorance on all this. I mean, I've been through the period where I was laughed at in the street by people. Oh, there goes the Yowie man. Well, Rex the Yowie man is now known all over Australia. I'm the father of Australian cryptozoology and reliquemology. I started in 1957. As a 13-year-old schoolboy at Liverpool High School, going through the school library, plucking out Aboriginal myths and legends books that happened to have hairy man stories. And that's what got me going. And from there on, I found that early settlers had seen them, miners and whatever, operating in out-of-the-way country here had seen them. And that was the beginning. And now I'm particularly interested in their physiology and the types of footprints, how the tracks are made, how they walk. And we can tell you that the claims that people were chased by yowies is nonsense, and it might be the same for Bigfoot. But the thing is, it's the leg, it's the bone structure. Homo erectus had very thick bones, and therefore he was a slow runner. Australopithecines were about the same.
Right, right. We have a question from Rob in North Carolina, who says that the Bigfoot, or the Sasquatch, as it's known in North American region, often is associated with a sulfuric smell, that it has a very distinct sulfur smell about it. Do you think it's possible that these things live in volcano vents and volcanic caves?
I don't think so, but I'll tell you this. Even the Yowie has smells, but then they really commons don't have showers and baths like polite folks usually do. So they have this smell. They've got faces and everything. They roll in and God knows what. So touch a Yowie Bigfoot and you'll probably get some of the smell on your hands. So there's a lot of creatures like primates generally in out in the bush. So really the smells are natural, and particularly if they get caught in a rainstorm or something, the smell's very prominent after that. I have actually followed a scent through the bush here about 3 years ago out here in Canangaroid Wilderness, and whatever it was, wasn't all that far ahead of me. And daring, aren't I? And anyway, I followed it to see if I couldn't get that million to one photograph. And anyway, I came to a creek where it had obviously hopped over, and I saw some tracks. And it was granite country, so they're intermittent footprints. But it's pretty wild up there. And you go in too far and you might get the feeling that there's more than one watching you. I don't think they'd really harm you. I've never heard of any real story in this country of people being attacked deliberately by them. If you cornered a female with a child, well, it would naturally defend it, like any animal. And so otherwise, they keep themselves and watch us out of curiosity. And I do have that distant creature on that photo from the Jameson Valley, and that tells me that although it's not 100% evidence, to me, it's a reward sort of, although I didn't know I had it for a couple of years until Heather put them on the computer one night. And so I've got this evidence. Now, myself, I've got a photograph of one in the distance. It is probably a male, but I'm very lucky there. So it's possible that someone might get better photos, even in America. But the situation in America, I've found there that there's a lot of rivalry and whatever. There's no reason for this. Researchers should forget all this stupid rivalry and come together, put all their evidence on the table. Everybody put in their $2 worth, and we'll come to the solution sooner or later if we can get everybody's evidence together and pool it and say, this is what we've got, and then present that to your disbelieving scientists and see what they have to say. Proof must be out there. It must come. And it won't be helped by people coming forward with fake hair samples, fake footprints and the like. You know, these people give relict hominology and cryptozoology a bad name that we don't deserve.
We have a question from Rick in New Mexico. Earthplay would like to know, are the Yowie in Australia also known as six-fingered beings? Do these things have six fingers?
No, they have five fingers like any other hominin, unless, of course, you might find a freak in nature. We have people that have been, modern humans, that have been born with more than one digit. It's not impossible, it's not a normal thing.
There's a man called Stephen Strong who I've been in touch with, and he's from New South Wales. He found massive evidence of ancient civilizations in the New South Wales bushland. What do you personally think of the real possibility of super ancients living in Australia before we were colonized by the British?
Mr. Strong is a plagiarist, but I'm the man who found the megalithic structures in the Australian bush. He didn't know anything about them until I came along with articles in papers. I've spent a whole life time without, we don't make money out of this, we're not into it for money, but certain other people are. And I've come to the conclusion that civilization, as we know it in the textbooks, is not correct. That there were civilizations before what we've been told. Here in Australia, we have the Uru, the Australian megalithic culture. The Uru was the name they gave themselves in their written language, which took me 28 years to crack. It's only found on rocks, of course, and the translation of them showed me, after 28 years, I was dealing with a mother script from which we have Near Eastern symbols and the like, elements of Near Eastern words and whatever made up this language, which, well, before it reached the Near East. But this language, the written symbols, were adopted not just by the Sumerians, for example, but by Persians. We find it amongst Phoenician rock script, even here in Australia. Phoenicians and Egyptians and Libyans and Celts were visiting Australia in the Bronze Age. I've written a book on it, Pyramids in the Pacific, The Unwritten History of Australia and Pyramids of Destiny, Lost Pacific Colonies of the Bronze Age God Kings, which talks about the mining that went on here 3,000 or so years ago, and how they've left all this evidence in way of relics and ruins around Australia. We have pyramidal structures, and I was the man who discovered the famous Gympie Pyramid, and plagiarists stole it off me. But they ripped it apart looking for non-existent treasure. They went to work with it, even with a small earth mover. They ripped out the north face of the structure outside the town in bushland. And the man with the bulldozer said, oh, I did it to make it easier to get at the buried treasure. That's the sort of mentality that we have in Australia, if not elsewhere. There's always people that think of these relics as having some sort of value. Every time I try to get someone, young people I thought might be interested, I soon know whether they're trustworthy or not, because they'll ask, like one fellow did, when we find any relics, where do we sell them? I am in this, and my wife Heather are in this research to find the hidden history of Australia and the Pacific region. We're in this to show that the civilizations of the ancient world were world travelers long before Magellan or Cook, and that Australia plays the major role, because we have this mother civilization that spread beyond Australia at some stage to carry megalith building into the old world. And I've got a whole list of 15 published books, with another 6 coming out soon. One you'll be interested in is about the Uru and the Amerindians, that is of South and Middle America, and to some extent North America, how the Uru crossed the Pacific at a very early period and settled in amongst the pre-cultured Stone Age Amerindian ancestors, and imparted much of their megalithic skills, which caught on in the southern parts of America, in Middle America and South America. And they, of course, were called the white gods, Kukulkan, Viracocha, and whatever. Well, this is what we found, and this book is enormous. It's about as thick as Tor Heyerdahl's great work, American Indians in the Pacific, because the Hopi and other people all knew, before a white man even set foot in America, they all knew that across the great water of the Pacific Ocean was a great western paradise land, at the center of which rose a great red rock marking the center of the world. Now, how the hell did they know about Ayers Rock, or Uru, as the Aborigines call it, unless someone had come among them and taught them these things? No, there's much that we just do not know, even about our own backyard. I have found things in America which, if I'd found them in Australia, would be, old hat perhaps, but in America, you don't know that the Uru have left rock inscriptions there at Yosemite, at Lone Pine.
In the Grand Canyon?
Yes. I had about a dozen different locations I'm thinking of that we found Australian megalithic rock script mixed in with Indian symbols.
Wow.
I actually climbed into a cave to find that This was a big granite boulder cave, and on the ceiling were symbols, hunting images and others of the Paiute Indians. But I also found Australian hieroglyphs, that is, Uru hieroglyphs among them, and it was actually a language, a written language. And I put my clipboard to one side, took photos laying on my back, and a gust of wind came in and blew the clipboard with all the evidence I'd collected written down, you know, in the whole trip. And we were 2 weeks into it by then, and it just sailed down this hollow at the end of the cable. When I looked, I could see in the dim light, and it was afternoon, I could see in the dim light about 3 metres down on a narrow ledge my clipboard. Well, how I climbed down and got that, I don't know, but I climbed back up and that clipboard went straight in my backpack. And whenever I go to into the bush, I wear an Indiana Jones hat too for inspiration. I wore that hat all through America. And I have great luck, I might say. Eh?
You sound like an extreme adventurer.
I am. I love it. That's why I don't like getting old. But I've got to, I suppose. But I'm going to fight it to the finish. And as far as I'm concerned, you live in a beautiful country. And please do something to keep it that way. I don't like the way that politicians work hand in hand with developers to tear down forests. This is happening in Tasmania, where the Tasmanian tiger's habitat is threatened, and it's supposed to be extinct there. We found tracks there 3 years ago, fresh tracks, and they're only about an hour old. I've had some adventures, Steve. I've actually sat on a mountainside in South Island in New Zealand, 2 o'clock in the morning, waiting for some casts of a moa to dry, one of the extinct giant birds. And these were fresh tracks of a small scrub moor. And through the trees, about 50 feet away, the full moon that was coming up over the mountains, came through the jungle. It was beautiful. And all I could do was sit there and watch while something appeared out of the bush. It had a dumpy body, thick legs that must have been about 8 inches across, and it stood there, and it had a long neck. I thought, is that just a lot of foliage and a long stem of a bush or something, or a young tree trunk? But no, it moved, and the head was in amongst foliage, and it was obviously chewing away at it. And it was making an emu-like sound, like hump, hump, hump. And then the hump would suddenly become hump, 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 a real shrill sound. And that's what the old-timers in New Zealand said the moas made, particularly the giant moa. And that's what I saw. The giant moa has been extinct 600 years, according to the scientists. Yes. All their fossils... skeletons in the museums are subfossil. But there's people that will tell you in the South Island forest anything could live there, and I've proven it because I found three tracks there of a giant moa crossing a deserted mine, a shale mine track that went back about 100 years, and it had been abandoned. And this old trail is used by occasional bushwalkers or trampers, and crossed from one forest to another. A scientist later told me that the casts had to be fake because it's extinct.
We are going to have to wrap up here, Mr. Bjorn. We are going to have to wrap it up here, but I'd certainly love to have you on again to talk a bit more about it.
It will be a great pleasure. I'm just getting warmed up.
Well, you've been listening to the People Who Speak Radio Show with very special guest and author, Mr. Rex Gilroy. I'd like to thank him and invite all the listeners to visit his website at www.rexgilroy.com or www.mysteriousaustralia.com.
And if anybody wants to contact me, it's R&H Gilroy, lowercase, of course, R&H Gilroy, 1044@gmail.com. And I'll be pleased to hear from anyone that's interested.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for being on the show today, Mr. Gilroy, sir.
Call me Rex. I love what I do, and I live for it. Yeah, it's food.
Absolutely.
Knowledge is food. Some people disagree there, but I just cannot live without my bugs and my rocks around me.
Fantastic. Okay, stay tuned for our very special guest coming up soon, Norma Hashim, on the People Speak Show. Big thanks today go out to the producers, Mike, Doug, and Donald, to the room admins, Earthplay, Love is Light, and Sunyata, Serene Sunyata, and to all my friends throughout all the world, and to all the guys who give me so much support. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. You can tune into my own channel on YouTube called Stop Funding Israel. But for me for now, take care, and bye until next time.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief office, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.